The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you this morning on Thursday, August 6th. Good morning, and thanks for being here with us on Morning Drive. You're also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge, watching us on the PCTV Select app, which is free to download, by the way, or on our website, pittsfieldtv.org, or on cable channel 1301, Access Pittsfield. Glad to have you here, in whichever way you're here this morning. Always appreciate it. And we do have a great show for you this morning, as we always do. We're live this morning, by the way, on this Thursday. Folks from the Berkshire Museum's Aquarium are here, and I know you want to hear about that because the Berkshire Museum just reopened last Wednesday, the 29th, and we've got folks from the Aquarium to tell us about. That's sort of like the centerpiece now of the museum, the big attraction, and there's some really fun things to learn about and hear about with the aquarium at the museum. So we're going to talk all about that today, right after our weather forecast coming to you from the National Weather Service. Here it is.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, mostly cloudy. Patchy fog. Near steady temperature in the mid-60s. South wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday, partly sunny. Scattered showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty wind and heavy rainfall in the afternoon. Hot with highs in the mid-80s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 50%. Thursday night, mostly cloudy. Scattered showers and thunderstorms in the evening. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty wind and heavy rainfall in the evening. Humid with lows in the upper 60s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 50%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you go. And I hear that we are going to have kind of a pattern setting up over the next couple days where we've got some hot and humid weather during the day, maybe some clouds and some sun, followed by some storms at night, and some thunderstorms could be strong, I'm hearing, over today, tomorrow, potentially Saturday. I heard Sunday is going to be a nice sunny day, so we'll see how that one sets up. But, you know, we get in these patterns, and that's the way it goes with the weather. Enjoy the summer while you can anyway, no matter whether it's hot or steamy or rainy or whatever it is. It still beats January as far as I'm concerned. All right, Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, and I'd like to welcome our guest here this morning. We've got John Brancazu Jr. John is the aquarium director at the Berkshire Museum, and we've got Jordan Williams. She is the aquarium manager. Thanks for being here, and welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Absolutely. So lots to talk about, from what I understand. We did a show before the museum reopened, and it was kind of a preview show of what people could expect, and we sort of talked a lot about the entire building and all the different things that would be happening. But we kind of focused a lot on the aquarium at that time and said, okay, this is, it's been moved, and you know, where it's going to be and those kinds of things. So we want to get into all of that this morning. First, before we do that, let's talk about the two of you. Give us a little bit about yourselves. Tell us your background and how you got to be where you are right now at the museum. John, we'll start with you.
I've always been interested in the environment. I grew up watching Steve Irwin and Jeff Corwin, so that kind of sparked my interest. Mm-hmm. And then the aquarium thing started. I walked into a store in Lanesboro. We used to have a saltwater store there. Hmm. And when I looked into those saltwater tanks, the reef tanks, and saw the corals swaying and the current and everything, the motion, that was it. I got hooked. I started doing it at home. You know, every few months, kept getting a bigger and bigger tank. I eventually started volunteering at the Berkshire Museum in 2010. Mm-hmm. And I worked with my former supervisor, Scott Jervis. Hmm. And at that time, his helper was moving on, just a different chapter in his life, and just the timing worked out, and I started working in the aquarium. But I also did all kinds of work in the museum, security, guest services. I worked events. I've done a little bit of everything in the museum. Hmm. So I think it put me in a good place to start working in the aquarium. And I've been there ever since. It's been fun. I've met a lot of great people. Traveled, gotten to go to other aquariums in different states. Mm-hmm. It's a really welcoming world, the aquarium world. We can send an email to any aquarium, definitely in the U.S., probably in the world, saying, hey, we're going to be visiting. Can someone give us a tour? And they will always say yes.
Wow, that's very cool. So it sounds like for you, it was an early interest, and it just blossomed into working in the field. And that's like everybody's dream for a career, right? You find something that you like to do, and then you find your way into it, and you do it.
Yeah, it is fun going to work every day, especially now with this new aquarium.
Yeah. Jordan, tell us about yourself and how you got interested and involved in aquarium, and how did you land at the Berkshire Museum?
Yeah, so I think kind of similar to John, I always had this love for the environment. I love going to the ocean as a little girl. Mm-hmm. I was always had goggles and the snorkel mask in the water, and I was always like, what's that swimming by? I always wanted to know more, right? The ocean was always intriguing to me. I wanted to go to school for marine biology. I ended up going to MCLA and getting my bachelor's in biology with a minor in environmental studies. Mm. My last semester of college, I was actually interning at the museum, kind of similar position to John, where a position opened up in the aquarium, mm-hmm. and it just kind of lined up. It was my last semester of college. They offered me the job, and I haven't looked back since. You know, so that was back in 2017. So I'm going on my ninth year here at the Berkshire Museum.
Well, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
And so nice to hear, too, the local folks that are sort of homegrown and enjoying the Berkshires and coming back to work here and doing the things that they're passionate about and that they went to school for and that they're just interested in. It's wonderful to hear that. So let's talk about the aquarium and the big rebirth of it. Both of you remember the old aquarium, right? So give us set the scene there for what that was like, and then let's transition to talking about what it's like right now. So give us an idea of the aquarium had been there, I guess, since the 70s, or was it earlier than that? Maybe you don't know that history.
It was the mid-early 80s. Okay. It was a few years before I was born.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And it was in the sort of the basement part of the museum. So, but a lot of people are familiar with that and remember going down and walking through that.
Yep. A lot of people grew up going to the museum and seeing the aquarium and bringing their kids to the aquarium. Mm-hmm. We get, you know, people that say that all the time to us. You know, I grew up going there. Now I'm bringing my kids there. Now I'm bringing my grandkids there.
I remember it being kind of a bit more cramped space. A little darker. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah. Every public aquarium I've been to always sort of has that look. Mm-hmm. They're usually very dimly lit, and it's the tanks that are glowing and draw you to them. Mm-hmm. So our basement aquarium was certainly like that, but our new aquarium has that effect as well.
Does it? Okay.
With the addition of our glass walkway, which is a lot of a fan favorite to say.
Okay. Describe that for me, the glass walkway.
It's amazing. So there's two entrances to the aquarium. If you go to either one of them, you walk up to double glass doors and you see the glowing blue glass walkway leading you into the aquarium. Mm. It's awesome. It's a cool look.
Nice.
And we also have the option to adjust the lights on that for holidays or Pride Month it's adjustable. So it's fun to play with. It's really neat to see.
Nice. And Jordan, give us an idea too of your impressions of the changeover from the old facility down in the basement level of the museum to the new, and describe some things that pop out at you.
When I think of the basement aquarium, I think about when you walk into the museum and you go down the set of stairs, and like you said, it's just dark. Like you're looking down, and the tanks are the first thing you're looking at. When I walk into the new space in the aquarium, yes, it's dark and dim, but I'm immediately drawn to the tanks and I look up. It's just like I'm overwhelmed because we have tanks that are floored to almost the top of the ceiling. So I feel like it's dim, but it's just brighter. Like you're just completely entrapped by all the tanks around you.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, the aquarium is kind of the centerpiece of the new build-out of the museum, and it's in that the place where the old auditorium was, right?
Correct.
So for people that are looking for a way to figure out where it is in the building. So when you walk into the Berkshire Museum and you go through the entryway and things like that, how do you find your way to the aquarium from there?
Well, when you walk into the museum, you go left and you check in at the front desk. And then if you go left or right from the front desk, you'll end up at the aquarium because the first floor, it's basically a square.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two entrances on either side, or one entrance on either side of it to the aquarium. So no matter what way you go, you can find the aquarium. It's centrally located, as you said.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the improvements then. Are the tanks larger? Is there more sort of room to walk around? Is there more display space, which explains more about the creatures that are there? Tell us a little bit about that.
Go ahead.
Downstairs, our largest tank was 500 gallons, and up here, our largest tank is 1,300 gallons.
Okay.
So that's a huge improvement. From the back of house space, I feel like it's more functional equipment. It's up to date. There's more working space. Mm-hmm. So that's great. We have our own separate quarantine room. So when we get new fish orders in, we can properly quarantine them before they're put onto the display tanks. So that's a huge improvement.
Okay. Are they all saltwater tanks or are they some of them freshwater tanks?
Both.
How does that work?
Yeah. Actually, three. So we have freshwater, we have saltwater, and we have brackish.
Ah.
And I love the design of this aquarium, especially from a functional standpoint, because one side of the aquarium is freshwater and one side of it is saltwater, because those have very different equipment needs.
Okay.
Like saltwater aquariums, they have a filter called a protein skimmer, which mixes tank water with fine air bubbles and it rises and collects waste. It's like the foam you see on a wavy day at the beach.
Okay.
That's nature's version of protein skimming. Mm. So they have very different equipment needs. So from that kind of standpoint, it's an awesome design having fresh and salt. And it's also very, you know, from an aesthetic standpoint, it works well also. So with the fresh water, we've also got our terrarium, our dry tanks, terrariums over there, dart frogs and whatnot.
Hmm.
And on the saltwater side, we've got our brackish tank with that, because brackish is where in the environment where fresh water and salt water meet. Think the Everglades.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of creatures do you have in the brackish tanks?
We've got monos, we've got figure eight puffers, and
I don't know what a figure eight puffer is. Tell me what that is.
It's a little puffer fish it's got green on it and little black designs that almost look like a figure eight, so okay. Hence the name.
Huh.
And the really neat fish in that tank would be the archer fish. So they're fish that will line up with their eyes like an archer, and they will spit a stream of water up at a leaf, at an overhanging branch, and they will actually knock off crickets and flies and bugs into the water, and then they will eat it. And I've actually, when it's quiet in the aquarium, I've gone up to that tank and wiggled my finger above the tank, and I've gotten water spit at me. So
that must be fun. And so that tells me, too, that there's a lot of sort of back-end stuff that most people don't have to think about, but like all the pumps that you have to have and all that stuff has to have a home and to be maintained correctly. Mm-hmm. And then all of the things that you have to feed the fish and the creatures and everything, right? So describe some of that process for us, to show it, you know, pull the curtain back a little bit and tell us what that's like.
So it depends on the tank and it depends on the animal. I think everyone knows one of the most exciting animals to feed right now is the octopus, because it's so smart, it's so interactive. When you look research their neurons, their brain chemistry, I've read that they are considered to be as smart, if not smarter, than dogs.
Mm.
And it's kind of becoming evident every day as we work with this octopus.
So did the museum ever have an octopus before?
No, at least not in my time, but no.
Okay.
Does
the octopus have a name?
Not yet, but okay. I think it's going to happen because it's just a fan favorite.
Yeah.
And it keeps getting, no pun intended, floated around to do it. So we'll see. But
aquarium puns are okay. They're allowed.
Yeah,
this
and they seem to come easy. But the octopus is fun to work with and feed. She's not shy now. I'd say maybe the first few days we got her, she was hiding a lot.
Really?
And we have a Caribbean reef octopus. They're nocturnal, but she's always out. she is, I'd say she's out at least 80% of the time. We feed her with a big yellow glove.
Tell me what octopi eat.
Basically anything they can catch. Heavy on shrimp, clams. If, you know, a sick or dying fish falls to the bottom, they'll grab it. Mm-hmm. Anything they can catch. They are predators, mm-hmm. so they'll hunt crabs actively. But when we feed her, she sees that yellow glove enter the tank, and I watched my coworker feed her yesterday. She came right out, landed right on the glove, and he hand-fed her some clams.
And what tank does the octopus live in? Is that the saltwater?
Saltwater side, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is there, like, octopus, do they stay at the bottom of the tank, or do they move around?
Everywhere.
She's everywhere.
Yeah. A lot of the time, luckily for the visitor, she'll actually be right on the front glass. Mm. So, and she's not hard to find. Even if she's hiding, you can usually peek into the rock crevices, and you'll see one of her arms. Mm-hmm. So.
And is it normal to have just one octopus in a tank?
Yes.
Could you have more than one?
If it's a very, very big tank with a lot of hiding spaces.
Okay. But, so you would need a much larger tank to have another octopus.
Yes. I don't think they get along well.
Oh, really? Okay.
I've been doing a lot of research and watching a lot of videos. And, yeah, I've seen online, you know, when they come up to each other and compete for a cave that they both want, they will fight. And, yeah, they'll get hurt, and we don't want that. So she gets she gets it to herself.
She gets to be the queen octopus. We're speaking with folks from the Berkshire Museum this morning, John Brancazu Jr., the aquarium director, Jordan Williams, the aquarium manager here on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. We're talking about the new aquarium, or the improved aquarium at the Berkshire Museum. And let's talk about some of the other new creatures. So the octopus is a first for the Berkshire Museum's aquarium. What other kinds of creatures should people expect to see that maybe they weren't expecting or they weren't used to in the previous iteration?
One of our other new creatures that we have are our moon jellies. They're in a cylindrical tank. We have about a few dozen of them in the tank right now. Mm. They have to get fed daily, and you can see it because you can see right after we feed them because their stomach is the color of the food that we feed them. So you'll see like a bright orange color in their stomach, so you know that they're full, which is good.
Good to have an indication, right?
Yeah.
Now, do they have to be in that tank all by themselves, or can other fish cohabit with them?
Nope. They are by themselves.
By themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's the reason for that? It's just that they would be preyed upon, or that they would prey on other fish?
Yeah.
How would that work?
Jellies are extremely sensitive. Mm-hmm. So if there's other fish in there and they even just do a, you know, an investigation little nip, it'll take a piece of the jelly with it. They're very sensitive. The whole tank is designed around them. That's why it's a cylinder. So there's no sharp edges for them to rub against. We have a smooth cover grate on the bottom. Everything is designed especially for them. They're very, very delicate. So it's best just to have a dedicated tank just for the jellies.
So much to think about, right? I mean, and there's so many. How many different species of fish or animal do you think you have currently? In ballpark. I don't even know if you could put an actual number on
Several dozen.
Yeah.
And it's hard. You know, a common question we'll get is how, you know, exactly how many animals live in the aquarium, or how many dart frogs do you have? That you can only do a ballpark because a lot of the animals will breed.
Yeah.
And you can't necessarily see the babies. Like in the dart frog tank, they're always breeding. The tadpoles will live in the pond. So you can't always see them. The cichlids will breed. And their mouth brooders is pretty neat. So you can see the mom carrying the babies in the mouth.
Hmm.
But yeah, we definitely dozens of different species of fish.
Mm. If they're breeding, do you end up having an overpopulation problem at some point? Or does that ever happen?
No, we've never had an overpopulation. No.
Even if we did, though, we have so many contacts in the aquarium world that we can post on a listserv. We can do a trade with other aquariums, or we can just donate them. So it's a really great partnership opportunity as well.
Is that something, too, where in the future you look to bring new and different species in on a rotating basis? Or do you plan to just sort of keep, you know, the ones that you have planned already?
We'll probably stick with the ones that we have planned. Mm-hmm. But it is nice That is always an option.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Having the more space now, I would imagine, probably gives you a little bit more option.
Yeah. There are certain tanks that are set up species specific, like the piranha tank will always be a piranha tank. The jellies will always be a jelly. But
Nobody else in the piranha tank, I hope, right?
Just the piranhas. Some algae eaters, yeah. Just to help, you know, eat algae and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
But some of the tanks, we do have the option. We could change species around if we so desired or needed to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there might be a species that become hard to get, and we'll just go with something else. So that's always an option, and it's commonplace in aquariums.
Hmm.
Something to keep in mind, too, if we are ever going to change exhibits, is that some of the tanks are on combined systems, which means that all those tanks are connected to the same life support equipment. So we need to make sure that it falls within the parameters of the other tanks that it's connected to.
Yeah,
so,
makes sense.
But it definitely is a possibility for the future.
Yeah, I think, you know, all those things are interconnected, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have to plan out for a certain number and certain kinds of creatures and fish, and, you know, I would imagine that that's dependent on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about feeding time at the zoo, if you will, or feeding time at the aquarium, because that must be a regular thing. How many times a day? Mm-hmm. What are the routines? How does that all get done? Tell us about that.
So, it depends on the tank and it depends on the species.
Hmm.
Like the octopus, we try to feed her 6 days a week, and then we'll give her a fasting day so we're not overfeeding her.
Huh.
The jellies, we feed at least once a day, live brine shrimp or sea monkeys, for people like me that grew up in the 90s and, you know, bought them at the store, bought the kit. And then we can look in the jelly tank and make sure
sea monkeys, of course, are not monkeys.
Yeah, that's brine shrimp.
Brine shrimp.
So we're hatching our own brine shrimp. We feed the jellies once a day. We visually look at the water column, make sure we can see it swimming around all day in the water column. We usually do two or three big feedings throughout the week. So we'll make sure, you know, we'll go through the whole aquarium and feed everybody. But there's also, you know, specific species that have to eat every day. So it's... Mm. It's different per tank, really.
Yeah. Is that something that happens during when people are walking through and looking at things? They see the feeding routines going on?
Yeah, you got a very good chance at seeing something something feeding. If we're about to feed the octopus, usually we'll run out and, you know, we'll announce it.
Yeah.
And people will flock over and watch the octopus eat. It's pretty entertaining to watch her eat because she'll latch on to the tongs and will not let them go. So usually you have to stay over her tank for 10 minutes while she investigates the tongs and in your glove before she'll move on.
Wow.
So it's always fun feeding her.
And then you said you have some tanks also with frogs and lizards and things like that. So what are some of those species and how do they go about their routines?
We have poison dart frogs, we have red-footed tortoises, we have chameleon, bearded dragon, legless lizard, gargoyle gecko. We have snakes, we have ball pythons, we have a hognose snake. The snakes usually get fed every couple weeks. And then as far as the reptiles go, we have some reptiles that are juveniles, so they get more frequent, smaller feedings. So those are usually every day, every other day, whereas the... adult reptiles, I should say, they eat about 3 to 4 times a week.
Okay.
The dart frogs eat fruit flies. So we culture our own fruit flies behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And a common question I get asked about the dart frogs, because they're poison dart frogs, and everybody knows the story about the arrows and whatnot in the Amazon. Poison dart frogs are not poisonous in captivity. The wild ones acquire their poison from the foods that they eat, from the insects they eat.
I didn't know
so that. So that chain is broken in captivity.
Huh.
So captive poison dart frogs are completely harmless.
Hmm.
Not to say you should be touching them, because it's not good to touch frogs, because the chemicals in your skin can be absorbed right into their skin. So
we could do more damage to the frogs than the frogs could do to
us. They're harmless to us, but we minimize touching them. And if you do, you should really... kind of rinse your hands off and pond water or whatnot before you have to handle them.
Mm. And how many of those different species can sort of live together? Can you put some of those
in
the same tank?
Yep, you can mix them.
Yeah. Which ones can't be? Which ones have to be
separated?
I've
never seen any that can't, really.
No.
All I've seen is usually one will become dominant with the breeding.
Mm.
And with us, that would be the phantasmal dart frog. It's a kind of a cotton candy looking color, pink and it's got pink and yellowish on it. They always seem to be the dominant frog with us. and with BCC. They have a tank there, and the Phantasmals take over the tank for, I don't know why, but they just seem to do the best in captivity.
That's funny. I wonder why. That's very interesting. But for the most part, they can all live together.
Yes.
They don't fight, or, you know, one's not going to eat the other one.
All I've seen is if one is, you know, hiding in a little cave and another one walks by, maybe it'll kind of lunge at it and the other one will walk away. That's the most dart frog drama that I've seen.
Mm.
Also in our dart frog tank, we have mourning geckos. So they are nocturnal animals. They do not bother the frogs, and the frogs do not bother the geckos. The geckos primarily serve to eat the extra fruit flies that are in the tank.
Okay.
So it's a nice mutualistic relationship.
So you have to keep that production of fruit flies going.
Yes.
Yeah. That seems fairly important. What are some of the other feeds that I think you mentioned, some things that you have to keep on hand, the shrimp and things like that?
I mean, we've got an assortment of the, you know, the typical flake food for the fish. Worms, smelt, clam, shrimp.
Ton of frozen variety. Brine mysa shrimp, bloodworms.
Yeah, that's a big one. Brine mysa shrimp. That's a really good food. Almost any fish will eat it, especially finicky fish. They love it. So we've always got a really big stock of frozen brine and mysa shrimp. Mm. That's an absolute staple for many of our fish.
We also go to the boat livery on Peck's Road, and we get worms and live feeder fish weekly and mealworms from them. The Massachusetts lake tank that we have, they go crazy over the worms.
Really?
They're like a bottomless pit. They will eat all day, every day.
And who's eating the worms mostly? What are the species that like the worms?
Piranha.
Yeah.
And our Mass lake tank, so the local species like perch and bluegill, they love the worms. Good thing about the worms is they survive quite a while in the water, so if any get missed, if they land on the bottom, they're still move around and attract the fish, so the fish will pick it up off the bottom, so we don't have to go in with big nets and tongs and whatnot.
What's cleaning like? Because the tanks, I would imagine, always need maintenance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're still, we're still actively learning our solutions to that and whatnot. The tanks are acrylic, so we're using microfiber and RODI water. This pure water that doesn't, you know, when it dries, it doesn't leave any marks on the water. Some of the tanks are big enough to actually dive, so we'll be doing that.
Wow.
We've got an underwater breathing system recommended to us by a fellow aquarium. So we will actually be entering the tanks with wetsuits and...
So again, for radio, I'm trying to imagine how big these tanks are. And if you're saying you're diving in the tanks, these are big tanks.
They're big. They're 1,300 gallons.
Yeah.
I'd say they're 8-9 feet tall. Mm-hmm. So we haven't done that yet, but we're going to be doing that.
Yep. And it just sounds like one of those regular maintenance things that always has to occur, because as we've seen, anyone who's ever had a fish tank at home knows that eventually it's going to get dirty,
algae,
right?
Yeah,
so there's freshwater and saltwater ones. So I'm imagining it'll probably be on an every other week schedule to start. So 1 week we'll do the fresh, 1 week we'll do the salt. And one of the saltwater tanks is chilled. It's going to be a kelp tank. So the water's running about 60 degrees. So I keep kind of joking with Jordan that can be her tank to dive because I think she's crazy. She swims at Hampton Beach where the water is 60 degrees.
That's about right.
I can barely get my feet in that water.
Yeah.
She swims in it. So I'm kind of joking that the kelp tank is going to be her tank. I don't like cold water. I like swimming in 80 degree water.
I do picture, though, you having some sort of a dive suit or something to do that.
Yeah, please.
Must be. We're speaking with John Brancazu Jr. and Jordan Williams from the Berkshire Museum's Aquarium. And we're having a discussion here this morning on Morning Drive all about the new aquarium space at the Berkshire Museum. I want to drop this in right before we go to break that this Saturday there's going to be a free community day, from what I understand, right? Saturday, August 8th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And let's just chat about that for about a minute, and then we'll go to our break. Tell us about that event.
Yeah, thank you to Greylock Federal Credit Union for us to be able to do this. I hope to see many familiar faces and new people coming and seeing our new aquarium.
So it's free for everybody.
Yep, free for everybody.
For the day.
Activities throughout the day, and there's also going to be a food truck outside. It's just going to be, there's going to be something in every single gallery space going on. So stay tuned.
All right. So if you haven't heard about that yet, and you're just listening to Morning Drive this morning, it's Saturday. This Saturday, like 2 days from today, since we're live today on Thursday, and it's a community. Tell us about. It's a free community day, but there's an actual name for it. Community Reopening Celebration Day.
Yes.
Did I get that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Good, good. So that is something you're looking for something to do on Saturday. I don't know what the weather's going to be like, but that sounds like a pretty good thing to be doing during the day. It sounds like you'll also be very, very busy for that.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, we've been quite busy, but it's nice to see.
And we'll talk more about how busy you've been over the last few days since it only opened last week. And we'll talk more about educational activities and how visitors can protect aquatic systems. I think that's really important. That's one of the best lessons about visiting an aquarium and understanding a little bit more about those ecosystems, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll talk more about that and get more into it in just a moment. Let's take our top of the hour break right now on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, and we'll return with more talk about the aquarium at the Berkshire Museum. Stick around. We'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
My name is Courtney. I was born and raised here in the Berkshires. Substance use is in my family, in my friends' lives, and in my neighborhood. I have lost my marriage, my sister, and close friends. I am the voice of addiction. Addiction impacts all of us, not just those that are in active drug use. I carry Narcan because the person I save is someone's loved one. If I can save a life, I will. Recovery can start with a life saved.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Greetings, this is John Pollock, host of The Jazz Train, which comes your way every Saturday night from 10 to 11:30. The Jazz Train generally features music recorded on a particular calendar date in years past and provides relevant commentary and discographical details. So why not join me for a ride on The Jazz Train for a weekly musical adventure, coming to you on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sandrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at Sandrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you on a Thursday. It's August 6th, and we have the folks from the Berkshire Museum's Aquarium in this morning to talk a little bit more about what you can expect to see when you come to the museum, whether that's on the free community day this Saturday from 10 to 5, or whether it's another time. Maybe you or your student would be visiting there as part of an educational experience. Maybe you have a membership to the museum and you can come anytime you like. There's lots of ways to go and enjoy the museum, and the aquarium seems to be building up as the real centerpiece there of the organization. So we're looking forward to talking more about that in just a moment. First, one more look at the weather forecast here from the National Weather Service. And here it comes.
Berkshire Weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, mostly cloudy. Patchy fog. Near steady temperature in the mid-60s. South wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday, partly sunny. Scattered showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty wind and heavy rainfall in the afternoon. Hot with highs in the mid-80s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 50%. Thursday night, mostly cloudy. Scattered showers and thunderstorms in the evening. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty wind and heavy rainfall in the evening. Humid with lows in the upper 60s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 50%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it. A summer pattern is setting up for the next couple of days, and we're going to have some hot and humid days. I hear a Bermuda high. I haven't heard that in a long time. That used to be a thing, but that's, I guess, what we're going to be experiencing over the next few days with those hot, humid days and some rain and showers and thunderstorms in the evening, a chance of anyway, through Saturday, and then I'm hearing a nicer day on Sunday, so we'll find out. Okay, Morning Drive continues here on 89.7 WTBR FM, WSBR 88.1 in Lee Lenox and Stockbridge. And joining me again here in the studio, John Brancazu Jr., the aquarium director at the Berkshire Museum, Jordan Williams, the aquarium manager. Thanks again for being here, both of you.
Thanks for having
us.
Great
having you here, talking about such an exciting thing to see, the rebirth of the museum and the improvements that come to the aquarium. Just huge change, right, from being the smaller sort of tucked away experience in the basement to coming and being this middle of the building experience for people. Let's talk about some of the improvements, and I know that there are some new pieces of equipment that you've had to acquire to make these larger tanks successful and work correctly. A lot of behind the scenes stuff that people won't see. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's all top of the line equipment, very reliable. All the big tanks are powered by Pentair pool pumps, which I've talked to like my former supervisor Scott. He mm-hmm. he has a pool company. He said they're top of the line. You probably won't have an issue with those pumps for 10 years. Mm-hmm. All LED lighting, so low heat, low energy, very efficient, long lasting. Mm-hmm. We've got reef octopus protein skimmers. We discovered those in the old aquarium when we got some new skimmers. They're very reliable, very easy to use. Mm-hmm. They pull a lot of gunk out of the tanks, mm-hmm. so they're great. We're happy with them. On the reef tank specifically, those tanks have to have a lot of random water circulation. So you can't just put, a pump from Petco that shoots a straight line of water all day. You have to have oscillating random current.
Huh.
So we've got what's called Vortec MP40s in that tank. They're basically have a little built-in computer, and they randomly ramp up and down and do, random flow to simulate the ocean. That's mm-hmm. what corals like.
Mm-hmm.
Radion lights over the reef. So everything's top of the line, very reliable, very energy efficient, and it's working well. It's a joy to work with all this new equipment.
It sounds like a lot of new technology is involved with this too, right?
Yes.
Like stuff that they wouldn't have dreamed of in the 70s and 80s to make these environments more habitable for the creatures that you've got there, right? I would think that's important.
Yeah. You want to?
Yeah. Also, too, all of our equipment is connected to it. It's called a software called Apex Neptune Systems. Mm. So we have an app on our phone or our iPad so we can travel with it. So we can be home and get an alarm like, oh, there's a pump that's failed, a skimmer that's failed, lights, and we can manually adjust everything from that. So it's like a fail-safe option for us.
And once you have technology like that, you wonder how you ever were able to do it before, right?
It's so nice. So I've always been kind of an old school aquarist. Just, you know, I want to plug something in and unplug it if I want to turn it on or off. But I have to say this Apex system has been, it's been working very well.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy when you can just walk up to a tank and, you know, the surface will be rippling because it's running and you could just swipe on an app and it shuts everything off. And when you turn the main pump off, everything follows. So the heater, the protein skimmer, the power heads, everything will shut off with one button.
Wow.
And I like it too, because if I get home and I know I had been, say, working with the octopus, and I'm thinking, did I turn her pump back on? Did I turn her heater back on? I can just open my phone and check and say, yep, everything's fine. So it's the Apex system has been very nice. I'm glad we went with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing to think about it that a lot of it was manual. And I, you know, a lot of people would probably have that image in their mind if they ever had a tank at home of the simple, you know, the water just flows over and it always is coming in. Then you got the same kind of, you know, equipment. But this is way beyond any of that. And it needs to be, it sounds like, because of the species that you have.
Yeah.
And their needs, right?
Yeah, and the scale. The scale of this aquarium. You know, we've got about 11,000 gallons, 36 different tanks. So it's a lot. So when we can just open up an app and it's all organized in front of us, broken down by tank, and we can check, you know, what's the reef temperature? Is this circulator pump on? Did I forget to turn it off? We could just check everything, right? Mm-hmm. Right on a phone, right on an iPad. So it's very efficient and it works. It's a good system. Mm-hmm.
How many people do you have at the museum working for and with the aquarium? Is it just the two of you?
Nope. So we've got three full-timers. Mm-hmm. We've got a part-timer and we've got some volunteers. And we really appreciate it. The volunteer interest has been huge in this new aquarium. So it's awesome to have.
How important is it to have volunteers?
Yeah. Very important, especially, again, at this scale. It's a massive help. Mm. Every email I get with someone interested in volunteering, it's highly appreciated.
Well, if there are people listening right now to this program and they say, I might be interested in volunteering to help out, how do they contact you and how do they get involved?
So I'd go on the Berkshire Museum website. There's a staff directory. You can email me. You can email Jordan. And we can put you through the proper channels and see if there's anything that we can do.
You never know who's listening, so it's always good to ask the question. And sometimes there are people that are looking for the right volunteer opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. So not every volunteer opportunity is right for everybody, but, you know, you get that right person in the right job, and it makes a huge difference.
Even if it's someone just cleaning exterior acrylic fingerprints for 2 hours, everything helps. Everything's appreciated, so...
And I would imagine you do get some little fingerprints on some of those tanks, right? So let's talk about that. So this is there's a lot in this for children, for kids. It's a wonderful experience for them. It's great for all ages, I'm sure. But the impressions that you're going to make on younger visitors are going to be very important. And let's just talk about sort of overview of what the educational opportunities are with the Berkshire Museum, because maybe people don't understand that there are a lot of school tours that come through and people on a regular basis are using that as an educational part of their learning experience, going to the museum and taking all this in. What's that like from your point of view?
So we have a really incredible education team at the museum. Yes, we work with school groups and outreach and visitation. So we'll have school groups come to the museum, or our education team does a lot of outreach. We'll do animal handling training with our education team, and then they will do animal programs at the museum for kids, which, you know, kids absolutely love, and it leaves impact. So you might create another John or Jordan in the future if they hold a ball python or get to touch the back of a ball python. You know, a kid might have been afraid of a snake and think they're, you know, slimy and scary until they get to touch the back of a ball python and realize they're not scary. And, you know, that might get them to go to school in the future for animal care or zoology. So it's those little things that you know, can change the direction of a life like it did for me or Jordan.
Yep.
So it's...
You never know what that
could
spark...
have. You never know how big of an impact
right.
education could have on a on a kid growing up and introducing them to animals or fish.
Our education team is amazing. We were closed for about a year and a half, and they were still out in the community weekly. They were still making those impacts of visitors. They've created so many. They're called MOMUs, which are basically mobile museum units that they brought to different schools, libraries, different public spaces. So they definitely kept our name out there for the public. So it wasn't like we were away for that period of time.
And that's another opportunity, right, that is offered is to when people can't come to the museum, you're able to use that mobile museum to get to them and to do that outreach.
And we've got our museum branded van that we can travel with and go to schools and whatnot. Yeah. And so
what kinds of things do they do with the van?
They transfer the mobile museum units.
Yeah.
That's definitely huge. I believe they also go on site or off site to different schools and different public places like libraries or the YMCA, and they do programs there as well. Other staff use it too. Like sometimes we'll use it to go to another aquarium. So that's nice branding.
Yeah.
It's got a lift on it. So, you know, if we get a heavy load of fish or whatnot from, say, Albany via aquarium, it's nice that we have the van to transport.
Nice. We're speaking, if you're just joining us, with John Brancazu Jr. and Jordan Williams. They're from the Berkshire Museum's Aquarium. John's the Aquarium Director and Jordan is the Aquarium Manager. And this is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. We were just talking about some of the educational opportunities at the museum and how that ties in maybe to making the next John or the next Jordan be really interested in marine biology or you know, any of these fields or related fields. It might just be the spark that makes somebody think about that. But I think beyond that, and I know we wanted to talk about how visitors are sort of interacting with the aquarium in the museum to understand what we need to do to protect some of these aquatic systems, right? The ecosystems that support all of this life on our planet. So it's really like kind of a microcosm of that, right? When you walk into the aquarium, you start to gain a greater understanding of that. What are some of the things, some takeaways that you like people to get after they leave the museum's aquarium?
Captive breeding is a big one. I can give you an example. The yellow tang, it's a quintessential saltwater tank, saltwater tank fish. When I started in the hobby, they used to be about $50. You can get them at Petco. They're from Hawaii. Then Hawaii clamped down on their fish trade.
Okay.
And the yellow tang, you know, went from $50 to several hundred dollars, very hard to get. But the market did its thing and people started captive raising them. And, you know, the price came down, availability went up. But that's good. So there's a lot less taking from the wild and we can raise them in captivity.
Because that could be a real problem, right? Just the fact that people want to see these species in captivity, but you know, you certainly, if you can't travel to Hawaii and see them in person, the next best thing is to be able to go to the Berkshire Museum and see them there. But that impact, right, that could have an impact on an ecosystem. So that's really important.
Another interesting one would be the reef tank, corals. There's a lot less taking of corals from the wild and a lot more raising them in captivity now because you can, it's what's called fragging. So you can take a coral, cut it in half, and you just made two. And you can cut those in half and you can trade them with, you know, fellow hobbyists. So most corals are very easy to raise in captivity and you know, make little frags of them so you can make new colonies, trade them with other aquariums. We're on an email list. It's a worldwide aquarist email list where we all trade back and forth animal specimens, knowledge, questions, all that. So, you know, we don't necessarily have to go to a vendor. We can just place an email, and if someone has extra of a species of poison dart frog or extra of a coral, we can just get it from another aquarium. And that it helps take the load off the wild. Captive breeding and raising is becoming larger and larger in the aquarium world.
I think people hear a lot about coral reefs being in danger, and a lot of that has to do with climate change. and how warm the oceans are and how warm these and do they not survive well in the warmer temperatures? Is that really the big problem with the coral reefs?
It is an issue. I'll give you an interesting example. When I used to have a tank at home, I didn't have a chiller or anything. Mm-hmm. It was just a bare bones tank, and it was during a heat wave. I saw my tank get up to 88 degrees, and I didn't have a single ill effect in that tank from that. One of the big issues, I think the bigger issue, is pH. So when CO2 gets added to a saltwater environment, the pH drops, which means acidity is rising. Mm-hmm. That's detrimental to corals. That's a big one.
Okay.
And me and Jordan, we also visited Sombrero Reef in the Keys when we were visiting a vendor, a potential vendor down there. And the lady told us that the water under that abandoned lighthouse there can get up into the 90s. And it's basically a coral desert there. There's nothing near that lighthouse because it's so warm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I saw 88 degrees, but maybe there's a threshold where they just can't handle it. And that lighthouse there is an example of it, Sombrero Reef.
And tell us why coral reefs surviving and thriving is an important thing, right? Because I guess it's probably not something a lot of people think of on a daily basis, but it's important to the ecosystem, the entire ecosystem. Why is that?
It's basically the ocean's version of the Amazon. Mm. So much life lives in there and relies on it. That's kind of my best little saying for that. And another one is corals are so chemically complex. And I know there's a lot of studies always going on for, you know, possible medical treatments. You don't know what cure could be lying in the tissue of that particular coral, you know, in the Keys. So there's just endless reasons to care about and protect coral reefs.
And what do people take away when they leave the aquarium, and do they have a better understanding of the things that they can do as individuals to protect some of these ecosystems? Do they know that's important and that maybe they can play a role in it? What do you think, Jordan?
I think that's one of the things that our educators and our public programs team highlight, is they look at the environments that we have our species in and the habitats that we're trying to create. Here at the museum, they don't have to worry about global warming or trash polluting the waters. Mm-hmm. And one of my big take-home messages is it's like the camper's method. Whatever you bring, you take out. Mm-hmm. You don't want to leave your trash around, or fishermen, you don't want to leave your nets or fishing line around that can get caught in the animals, that can hurt the environment, chemicals that get dispersed into the water. You just got to be careful of all of those things that you're putting in. Every little thing causes some kind of contamination.
Yeah.
And so, you don't know the true effects of it. It could either happen tomorrow, next year, or 10 years down the road. It's just like a domino effect of things that can happen.
And so everybody has a role to play.
Yes.
Basically. You can't leave it to someone else to say, well, it'll get taken care of. Right.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it could just be that gum wrapper. Just everything has a trickle down effect.
Yeah.
You know, just it's the simple things and they all add up.
As we've seen, just the plastic in the oceans following the currents and ending up somewhere. And it's like, you know, how did it get there? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, somebody left it, or somebody, you know, was careless enough not to take care of it, and it just builds up.
Yeah, and then one person sees it, they think it's okay, and then the next person doesn't. Before you know it, the ocean is completely covered with trash.
Yeah, and plastic doesn't go away, folks.
No,
not for
it does
a long,
not.
Long time.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a typical day at the aquarium now that it's reopened for both of you. Take us through, you get there, and what are the kinds of things that you have to do on a regular basis to keep it operating and working smoothly?
First thing both of us would typically do is do a slow walkthrough, look, you know, visually inspect every tank from the visitor side. You're looking for any issues, distressed fish, animal waste, dirty acrylic, you know, anything that has to be cleaned, signs of water flow indicating that the pumps are running, are the lights working, anything that's an issue that we would want to take care of, you know, right off the bat. We log everything, check the feeding charts. Does anybody need to be fed? Check water quality. Does any water changes have to be done? That's one of the most important things with an aquarium, water changes. You're just pumping out old water, putting in new water.
How often does that have to happen?
It depends on the tank. It depends on the test results. Mm. Like, for example, once...
You can only treat the water for so long.
Yeah, but the tanks build up their own biological filter. So it's bacteria that lives in the tank, and that bacteria processes fish waste and makes it into non-toxic substances. Mm. So, like, the reef tank will get to a point where I'll probably be doing a water change once a year. Because there's so much rock and so much beneficial bacteria in there that it almost takes care of itself. And then the protein skimmer will pull out the rest of the waste. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the tank. The jellies, they eat a lot. So I'm kind of seeing us doing a lot of water changes in there.
Yeah.
So it just depends on the tank, really. The octopus is a notoriously messy eater. So she's going to have to get a lot of water changes. That's just the nature of octopuses.
Interesting. And how about you, Jordan? What's a typical day look like for you? What kinds of things that you run into on a regular basis to keep things working smoothly?
Yeah, like John said, before we open, it is the main goal to make sure the visitor side of the aquarium space looks great. Mm. You want the glass to look good. You want all the fish and the species living in the tanks to look healthy. So I'm making sure they're swimming upright, that their normal quirks that we see are normal, and trying to look for behaviors that are a little concerning. For the reptile side, we want to make sure water dishes are full, that they have a new plate of food, make sure there's no like snake skin or waste in the tank. Yeah, like John said, we just want to make sure that visitor side is the first priority. And then we go to the back house, make sure all equipment is functioning properly, making sure our water is testing good, making sure all feeding charts are up to date. Also connecting as a team to make sure that our priorities for the day are completed among all of the staff. And then all the extra little things we want to get to, we can do after.
It's interesting to hear that, just because I'm thinking to myself, if people are listening and they have their regular jobs, this is not a regular job.
No, it's not.
It's very, very different than that.
And it's like every day you walk in and you don't know where you're going to walk into. No day is the same.
Right.
You know.
And mainly because you're taking care of creatures that have different needs.
Exactly.
It's a lot different than an office job.
And I feel like, too,
where you're just dealing with the other creatures in your office.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So you were about to say something.
I feel like, too, as we're starting to work in this space more and more, we're starting to learn the quirks of the different species, too, and the tanks and stuff, so we know what looks normal, what doesn't.
Right.
So that'll come with time as well.
Like in the downstairs aquarium, because there's a lot of equipment running, a lot of pumps running, air blowers running. When you spend so much time in that kind of environment, you learn the background ambient noise. And you get to a point where you can walk into the aquarium and you'll just say, something's wrong, something's not working, just based on the noise in the background. Then you'll go find it and you'll say, oh, that pump needs to be replaced or whatnot. That's how in tune with an aquarium you can get.
And I would imagine the creatures in the tanks feel that too. Right? If something is off,
For sure.
They'll know
For sure.
Yeah. John Brankhazer Jr. and Jordan Williams, our guests this morning on Morning Drive from the Berkshire Museum's Aquarium. And we're just about running out of time here. We do want to remind people about the free event that's happening this Saturday from 10 to 5 a.m. 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. I'm not going to put you there at 5 in the morning. Don't worry. And it is the free community day. Tell us one more time about that and what people can expect to find.
I just hope to see a lot of people come and see our new aquarium. It's free, so stop on by.
Yeah, they're going to be having a lot of hands-on children's activities and different events going on throughout the museum. There's going to be a food truck outside. It's going to be great.
People will find parking, and that's another thing that they're on South Street. Anyone who goes to the Colonial Theater or anything downtown, they know that they can probably park over in the McKay Street garage, and it's a quick walk over from there. Where else do you recommend people park when they come?
I always recommend the Colonial public lot. Uh-huh. There's a lot of three-hour spaces in there, but I think it's fair game on the weekends.
It's free parking, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if you can manage to find a spot on the street,
I would imagine you're going to get people not only from Pittsfield, but from all around Berkshire County and maybe beyond that as well. When people come in for the free community day on Saturday, I'm sure you'll be suggesting that maybe they become members of the Berkshire Museum. That would imagine all the things we talked about here today don't come for free. There's a lot of regular maintenance and food and all the other things that you have to do to keep an aquarium like this going, right? I'm thinking that that's something you need regular members for.
Yeah, I know there's interest in being members. Just before we opened, a lady caught me walking into the building, and she said, "I can't wait to go in there." And I was like, "Oh, that's awesome. You know, we open in a few days. I hope to see you." And she said, "I want to be involved with the museum. I want to be a member." And I was like, that's awesome. There's a lot of excitement.
Great.
It's nice to work at a place where it's so welcoming to the community.
Yeah, and you want that, and we want that here in Pittsfield. So
yeah.
Congratulations for the opening. Good luck on the community day on Saturday. Looking forward to that. And if people want to get involved, how do they get in touch with the Berkshire Museum again?
I would say visit our website, visit our Facebook.
And that is?
BerkshireMuseum.org.
All right, there you go. All right, everybody. Jordan and John, thank you so much for being here. Great talking to you this morning. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks so much.
We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Take care.